Welcome to the United Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. If you could do me a quick favor, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, could you please take 10 seconds to leave us a five-star review and a comment about the speaker that you like the most? I love having speakers on here twice, so your feedback definitely lets me decide on who to invite on the show. I want to thank our good friends at Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish has been a loyal supporter since the very beginning with the podcast and the coaching clinics. Follow them on social media. They put awesome stuff out there all the time on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. Dish B-Ball on all social media. Also, coaches, check out UnitedBasketballPlus.com. It's the newest resource we have. Use the promo code UBPLUS, that's capital U, capital B, plus, and receive 10% off for an annual membership between now and April 15th. Coaches, enjoy the podcast. All right, guys, I'm blessed and honored to have Coach Don Schulwalter on the show for the second time. And we're going to talk about the DNA of a great coach. So, Coach, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's happy to. And it's always a pleasure to visit with you and people who listen. So, appreciate it.
Yeah, what a great time of year. We're about to have the Sweet 16 this weekend. We've got some high seeds in St. Peter, some upsets. It's just a great time of year all around for basketball.
Unbelievable, especially with the upsets going on, and and every team going into the tournament is a tough out. Nobody can plan, but that's why they call it March Madness.
Absolutely. I picked Kansas. I felt just one bracket. I picked Kansas to win it, and luckily my final four is intact. But after this weekend, I don't know if they will be or not. But well, Coach, again, thanks so much for joining us. You've been blessed to coach with USA Basketball and coach around the world and many high-level kids, and which has brought you in contact with a lot of great coaches. Yep. So as we talk about the DNA of a great coach, what do you think about when you hear that phrase, DNA of a great coach?
Well, you know, just a little background on this, how I came up with it was, you know, I get a chance to go around the country and really – around the world and watch players play. And at the same time, I always kind of focus in on the coaches too, which is really, I think is really fun for me to watch how coaches coach and what they, there's not one great way. There's not one really good way that everybody needs to coach. So you can be successful many, many different ways. And I think that's kind of the beauty, so to speak, of being a basketball coach is that, you don't have to do things just like somebody else to be successful. So when I watch coaches, I came up with kind of five pillars that I call a coach's DNA. And then during my scouting pieces with looking for high school players, I always try and go to a college practice or college games when I'm in that area. So, for instance, I'm in Philadelphia watching a high school game this past December, first part of December. Then I went over to watch Villanova practice, and one of my bucket lists was to watch a game in the Plestra. So I had to go watch a game, and Villanova played in the Plestra. So I try and really do things like that when I'm out and about, just to get a chance to see different coaches and what they do.
Well, yes. Let's look at these points individually for a few minutes. So you mentioned humility. So when you watch a coach, you spend time with a coach. Again, humility is something that can be deceiving. What lets you know that they're humble? And maybe it's because they've been humbled through tough experiences. But what do you look for? What kind of alerts you to that?
Yeah, that's Jeff Van Gundy had a great saying. And Jeff coached our America's Cup team. We have to put together G League players that we have to get together to qualify for the Olympics. So he coached several windows of that. So I really got a chance to listen to him and watch his practices. But he had a great saying. He said, at some point, there's two kind of coaches in basketball. Ones that are humble and ones that will be humbled. And I think that's so true with game of basketball. I mean, look at the March Madness. You know, you have all these great teams coming in, and yet the teams like, you know, St. Peter's and Richmond, and I go on and on, really, you know, they're the ones that come in and are able to humble teams that are much more known and have the, you know, the five-star athletes. So I thought that's a great, great way to phrase it with what Jeff said about humility. And you know, I go watch, and I'll go back to guys like Jay Wright a lot, because Jay's really kind of formulated a lot of my opinions about what a great coach is. But, you know, you go watch his practice, you know, he has no ego about him at all. I mean, you know, it's really great to see that, you know, he listens to his players. It's not all about him. It's about his players. And he's very respectful of the people there. His players come over and they always shake whoever's there watching. In my case, they come over, each one of them shook my hand told me their name. And then he invited me to go have dinner with him in the players lounge and stuff. So, I mean, it's just, he wouldn't have to do those things. And I wouldn't think any less of him if that didn't happen. But when it happens, you think, wow, this guy, you know, he really knows, he's really got his act together. He understands where he came from. And he's not the only one, you know.
Right.
There are a lot of others. Fran McCaffrey right here in Iowa City is the same way. I mean, he's just very humble. There are different coaches than what you see on TV many times.
Yep.
And Coach K is that way too. I mean, he's very, very humble. I think the coaches that really make it about their players are show much more humility than coaches who think it's more about them.
Yeah, it makes me think to a story of Bobby Cremins. I know you coach, you know, Coach Cremins, but, you know, yeah, my dad was a big Georgia Tech fan growing up. And anyway, Coach Cremins spoke at one of my clinics here in Chattanooga years ago. Now, he's retired, living in Hilton Head.
Yeah.
So anyway, he came and spoke at the clinic, and he was helping serve lunch. He was helping me get Chick-fil-A out of the car. He was helping pick up trash off the floor. So you're right. What we see, a lot of people think that these big name coaches are very arrogant, but man, a lot of them were coaching high school basketball like I'm doing right now at some point in time. And I think that they have a real level of gratitude. And like you brought up Coach Wright and Coach K and you know, Coach Cremins, he's, you know, probably in his 70s helping me feed coaches Chick-fil-A, and those coaches paid to come hear him speak. Just little things like that I greatly appreciate. And it just shows that they're just regular guys, and they appreciate not the luck they've had, but how blessed they are to be where they are.
Yeah. You know, and it goes back to, you know, all those guys at some point, you know, made $0 basically.
Yep.
They started coaching, and, you know, they were just working for, maybe it was room and board in a dorm room, and they were the GA, or they were, you know, and they all have stories. Most of them have stories like that. Very few of the coaches, you know, go from being nobody to somebody in a year.
Yep.
I mean, you know, Coach K, I mean, he says a lot that, you know, he was very fortunate to make it through his first 3 years. Yeah, I think his record was 37 and 49 his first 3 years. And, you know, he said nowadays he's not sure he would have been offered another year contract. So, you know, very, very humble. The humility shows. And I think when that happens, not only for the rest of the people, but the players see that humility, and they, you know, they, it builds more trust. It shows the players that, you know what, being humble is really a good attribute to have in the game of basketball, being a basketball coach or player. You know, it served them well. So I think it's a great teaching lessons, and they model, you know, if you model humility, then I think your players will be that way as well. If you don't model a humility, then I think your team is going to be that way. And I always think that being humble is an attribute that really makes people comfortable around you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when I go visit, Jay Wright, Coach K, I mean, even though they're huge, big names, that's not their fault that they're huge, big names.
Right.
And the humility around them shows that they, they're just normal people, and that they have an endearing gift to be around people that feel the same way.
Yeah. And I think in this day and age where it's just it's a me world with social media and things like that, and it's just a me world, that, these student athletes and high school young men and women need to see a coach that's humble and see that from their leader, a great example of that.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I think humility is one of those traits that is noticeable right away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have to be around somebody 2, 3, 4, and 5 times to notice the humility that is shown by coaches or anybody really. No matter, you go into the corporate world and, the CEOs, you can tell those people if they have humility and they're humble. I mean, it shows right away.
Yeah.
There's not a time period where you have to figure out if they're humble or they show humility. It definitely shows up right away.
Absolutely. And the both you guys you mentioned kind of lead us into the next point of your DNA is being a great teacher.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
I really started to realize that as a young coach, when I worked John Wooden's camps, and Coach Wooden was, people have read it in his books and stuff. He was very much a teacher, and he really emphasized that, coaching is teaching. And as a young coach, you kind of go, you say, yeah, it is, but you don't really understand what a good teacher does. And I think that's where a great mentor comes into play. And I think all coaches need to have a mentor in their lives from the standpoint of showing them the ropes a little bit, showing them how to do things, but also bouncing things off of them. Coach Wooden was one of those great teachers where, he modeled being a great teacher. And then yet you watched him as he taught, you picked up things that, this is really a good, just little things. For instance, just little things about, how to implement a new drill or the way he goes about it. And so I always say with teaching, it's a 5-step process. I mean, because our players don't learn the same way all right. the time. So teaching involves giving a description of what you want to do or telling players, all right, here's what we're going to do type of thing. Maybe it's on shooting, it's shooting drill, or maybe it's playing defense a different way. So you tell them, and then I think it's necessary that it's demonstrated. And so you demonstrate it before you get into, more high level stuff. So you demonstrate what you just went over, talked about, and then you get reps in. And the reps, Coach Wooden was very big on reps, get repetition, because he said the reps build habits.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you explain it to a player, you show it, then you rep it. and you continue repping. Then he said there's comes a point where you have to stop the reps and continue to teach and maybe change what they're doing. You formulate what they're doing wrong, and then you correct it. So correcting the reps then comes after a bit, and then you rep it again. So that the 5-stage process is, explain, show, rep, correct, and then rep again. And once you do that several times, then I think they get, the players understand what to do. And then that's a part of good teaching. And Coach Wooden demonstrated that tremendously. Coach Wright does a great job with that. I mean, you go to his practices, he's working on 2-foot jump stops in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of his MO, but that's what he teaches, and they're very, very good at it. And the more reps they get, of course, that builds the habit. So being a teacher is, not only on the court, but off the court, classroom teacher, same type of thing, where you have, a system that you go through for teaching some aspect.
Yeah. And I think that's the struggle some coaches have, is they have the knowledge, but then being able to communicate that in a way where, or using, the language that, players at their level can grasp and get the concept. And younger coaches, it's a process. They'll be a much better teacher at 32 than they were at 22 and 42 at 32. And sometimes we're too hard on ourselves, and we think we've got the answer to every question in the moment. But that's where having a mentor comes into play, someone you can call, or maybe someone to come watch your practice and give you some honest feedback. I think all that's very important.
Yeah, I think then too, players see that you're a good teacher. It really gives them confidence and trust in you as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back, I think, and I, as I go watch some high school practices and even some youth practices, I think coaches try and hurry things along too much. I know I did as a young coach. I tried to get, it was not a matter of what I got in, of how I got things in practice. It was how many drills I could do.
Yeah.
I'm going to do these 20 drills in practice. It doesn't really matter if I teach them or not. We're just going to get the drills in.
Yeah.
And I think as a young coach, I look back in some of my practices, I'm going, oh my God. We actually came through those practices in good shape. So I think you try to hurry things along too much rather than get your reps in, correct the reps, doing reps again. So we kind of spread things out too, with getting too much stuff in, and with nothing, obviously then nothing works out quite the way we want it to, because we don't have a basis for moving on. And it took, as a young coach, it took me some years before I really figured all that out.
Yeah. I think, again, part of being a great teacher, and it goes in to humility, is also being able to admit when you're wrong, or maybe, hey, I didn't teach a drill, guys. It's not your fault. It went poorly. I didn't do a great job explaining it. And I think that shows to your players, okay, this guy's humble. He's honest, and it builds that level of trust.
I just have to laugh sometimes. I go to practices where drill isn't going well, and all the coach does is just yell louder.
Yeah.
And he gets upset because the drill isn't going well when it wasn't taught well to start with.
Yeah.
And then also, part of that teaching is, you got to know when to let it go. After 10 minutes, if that drill isn't going good, and you think it's going to get better in the next 10 minutes, forget it. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And then players get frustrated. You get frustrated as a coach. Hey, just move on. And then there were times in my coaching career where I said, by golly, we're going to get this drill if it takes us all practice.
Yeah.
Better.
You've got it on the practice plan for 7 minutes, but you wind up spending 32 minutes on it. And then you're upset you didn't get some stuff to that mattered at the end.
Yeah.
The third point of, your coach's DNA that I think is tough for people is authenticity or being authentic.
Yeah.
So talk about that. And, you know, I just think that's one of the toughest ones because we always want to try to be someone or have this air of who we are. It's just a balancing act for coaches, I feel. Maybe every profession. This is the only profession I know. So right. What I can speak on. Same for you.
Yeah, you know, and I put that in there because I see too many coaches who really aren't teaching, aren't humble. And most of it goes back to the fact they're not authentic. They're trying to be, you know, back in the day, you're part of this day too, but back in the day, you know, coaches were trying, but the Bobby Knight theory, you know, you're trying to be as tough a disciplinarian or you think you are. And so, you know, that's not who you are. So,
right.
So players have a hard time figuring you out.
Yeah.
If you're not authentic. And I think you made a great point earlier by saying that, you know, sometimes we have to admit when we're wrong. And I think and that's part of being authentic. Hey, guys, you know what? I screwed up. You know, I screwed up this drill or, you know, we shouldn't have went into a zone when we were playing good man in a game or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's part of being authentic. And I go back and say that, you know, coaches seem to be a lot different on the sidelines than they are off the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, and that's not necessarily bad, but I think players need to see you in both perspectives.
Right.
So I always thought I always really tried to have, all right, you know, players, we're going to go out for a team meal or we're going to go bowling or we're going to go, you know, we're going to go to a college basketball game. So, you know, they can get to talk, you can talk with them and it's a different atmosphere than during games or practice. And I think that's kind of what makes you authentic as well. They can see, the players can see that authenticity come through off the court. And then I think they can understand more when you get upset in a practice or a game. I think they can understand that a little more because they've seen you, they know who you really are.
Right.
And I think, and again, I think players really have to know that.
Yeah, I always thought it helped my relationship with players when I had them in class. Like I've taught every history right now, I do economics, but just when they had me in class, they saw a different side and I saw a different side of them as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes it helped our relationship. Sometimes it didn't. Exactly. But I think it was good to see that, you know, see their coach as the teacher or whatever role they have within the school. And another point you said at the beginning, it made me think is you're right. Some people try to be the strict disciplinarian or copy someone else because they were served as an assistant under someone who was really successful. And then they go out on their own or take over that program. It takes them a little time to find who they really are. You want to use some attributes from that mentor, but you can't just copy them. Like, for example, you know, John Shire can't be Coach K.
Right.
You know, he's got to be who he is, taking all the things he's learned from Coach K.
You know, that's a great point, too, because you look at some of the really good coaches that are coaching college and their assistants go on to be head coaches at other institutions, other programs. And there's a lot in the struggle.
Yeah, they do.
I can name you several of them. At least they struggle for a year or two because they haven't figured out what their MO is. I mean, they're trying to be, you know, what they were, the guy they work for, they're trying to be just like him. And it just doesn't work. It works only when you're the one that has to be authentic about it. When you're the one that has to put in the practice plans, not trying to copy somebody else's practice plans for what you. So I always say there's a lot. I mean, there's some coaches that do it, but it takes a little bit of effort. And there's probably as many that don't make it that come from really good programs. It takes them a while. To find that happy medium between here's what I take from my mentor, or here's what I take from the person I work for, and here's what I got, you know. Yep. And you know, the players, I think players really want to know what you know. I mean, they want to know what you have,
right?
You know, they're there to, you're the leader of that group, and you know, they don't want you to copy somebody else.
Yep.
They want to play for who you are.
Yep.
I think again, early in my career, I felt that was when it kind of hit me that was really something I needed to kind of put my mind to, at being authentic. I think I really made my team much better. I helped them be much better because of that.
Yeah, and I think with the being authentic, you're going to fail. You're going to make some mistakes. But you also have to have a level of self-confidence and believe in yourself and surround yourself with a staff that believes in you, and you know, you build each other up. Because I feel like some guys, you know, are on an island and they're trying to copy the guy who won 3 state championships ahead of them and felt this pressure. And it's just, you can only do that for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. So, you know, excuse me. So I think that, you know, as I looked at coaches, and it's interesting to watch coaches coach that have not been head coaches very long. You know, I'll go to their practices and sometimes they're just, it's not who they are to do what they do in practice. And, I think, like I said, I think players can kind of read right through that.
Absolutely. And as we've mentioned several really good coaches in this, talk so far, being organized, that's key.
Yeah.
The fourth part of your DNA. So I know you've seen a lot of unorganized practices. I've been a part and been the blame for some unorganized practices, but we're talking about just more than practice planning here. So when you talk about organization, you're talking about a broad spectrum here.
Oh, absolutely. And most of us, you know, when it comes to organization, think about it, you're just being organized in your practice, which obviously, excuse me, which obviously is true. I mean, you have to have a practice plan. And, you know, I've seen coaches that are very thorough in their practice plans, and some that are just, you know, they'll just write down the drill they're going to do. And I don't think there's a wrong or right way to be organized with it. I think whatever fits your team. But I rarely go and watch good teams practice where the coach doesn't have what he wants to get done. You know, I can't remember. I've been to some bad practices where the coach doesn't have anything planned. He goes, well, let's do this today. Or, you know, or remember that drill we did 2 days ago? Let's do that drill again. You know, so, and you talk about organized allows you to have your pace of practice. I think practice pace is so important if you have to keep stopping practice to explain a drill you did 3 days ago, then your practice bogs down and there's no flow to it.
Yep.
Your players don't get in shape. Half of them don't listen type thing. So I think organization takes a whole gamut of things, like maybe just little things like naming your drills. So when I say, all right, let's do our Texas drills, they're already going to the spots for that drill as I'm saying it. You know, I don't have to explain what drill we're going to do. I just call it by name. And, you know, I think that has really been a help. And I know the coaches I watch do a good job with that. You know, they're, hey, let's do this drill. And by naming it, then it really helps with the pace, because now the players are already going to that drill. They're not standing around, you know, listening for the next the next guideline that you're going to give on that. So,
and I think players appreciate it when they see a practice plan in a coach's hand
And they realize this guy put some thought into it. He's asking us to give up 90 minutes to 120 minutes of our day. And we're thankful that he put some time into it. You know, I'm just how my personality is, because I can go over on things, or, you know, I have to do it, you know, to the minute, you know, and you may, and I leave a little buffer at the end if something goes over here, there, maybe want to go back and spend time on something. I used to just have 120 minute practice or so. Let's say it starts off that way and 120 minutes per field. Well, now I just want to feel maybe 105 or 110. And there's times we'll get out early.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, my personality. And the players, they want to look at the practice schedule. I'll post on the board, and, you know, all they want to see is how much 5-on-5 we're getting that day. Yeah, but we get a lot more than we used to, I'll tell you that.
Then,
you know, you've dealt with a lot of high level coaches in every area, you know, high school, college, pros, overseas, USA basketball. And, you know, I see a lot of coaches do my clinics and at the high school level, but I think that the high school coach is as organized as the elite level coach, because they've got to teach 4 classes of biology. They've got to cover lunch. Like, we don't have a ton of time in our day to just give it to basketball.
Yep.
And right when the bell rings, we're on the floor in 20 minutes. So I think the high school coaches are some of the best and most organized coaches around. And I know you've seen that, and you've been a high school coach.
Yeah. You know, we don't get a chance to meet with our staff for a couple hours in the morning and hammer out the practice schedule. And you know, you made a great point by saying, I think what happens too, when players see that you're organized with your practices, I think it gives them confidence in what they're doing. You know, hey, this coach, you know, we know what we're doing. Coach knows what we're doing. It gives them confidence in, yeah, you know, we can be pretty good at this.
Well,
and so I think that's a huge factor too.
Yeah, and I think this kind of bounces off the other things we've talked about. It shows that, hey, I'm humble. I don't have all this thing just in my head. I've got to write stuff down. It shows I'm a good teacher. You know, like everything you've talked about at this point, they kind of build off each other, you know? And again, I think organization is something that, you know, until you're thrown into the fire to various jobs, you don't realize just how many hours of film you're dealing with, or practice planning, or, you know, we schedule all our games. If the officials cancel, we're responsible for that. At the high school level, you may cover the concession stand, the gate, the booster. I mean, you know how it is. You've been there. It just doesn't end sometimes. And the college coaches are like CEOs of small companies. Coaches, I want to talk to you for just a second about why you should seriously consider getting a Dr. Dish. First of all, their payment plan system is unreal. 12 months, no interest. I paid half up front, and then I paid the other half over the next 365 days, and I have a brand new Dr. Dish CT. On top of that, it's just the best shooting machine out there. The CT is so user-friendly, as are all their shooting machines. So reach out to Dr. Dish. Tell them you heard about them on the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. Reach out to Dr. Dish. Follow them on all social media at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Now back to our guest.
You know, I do have a chance to, not a lot, but sometimes I get to speak to CEOs of various companies. You know, one of the things I'll talk a lot on is organization. Mm-hmm. And I think organization involves, it involves, you have to have your thoughts organized when you teach. In other words, you know, that's why it helps to write it down too. But if I'm going to teach a shooting section, or I'm a CEO and I have a meeting to lead about finance or whatever, you know, the organization part is, are getting your thoughts together that make sense when you're spoken, when they come out.
Yep.
And, you know, you can have, you know, what you're going to do, the drill you're going to do, or the meeting you're going to set or whatever. But if your thoughts aren't organized before that, you know, it could be a disaster. So I think that's really an important part to me, that as I got older and as I watched other coaches, you know, they're very organized in, all right, here's the steps I'm going to do to teach shooting today. Here's how I'm going to teach shooting. So they're organized in their thoughts as well as they're, you know, organized on their practice schedule, or they're organized in their thoughts, how they talk to people. And I'll even go a step further. you know, I think as coaches, we have to be organized in our thoughts and know what we're going to say when parents approach us. That happens all the time. So what's my thought process if a parent comes up to me after a game and complains about his son or daughter not, you know, not playing minutes or telling me how bad a job I did? You know, you just can't come into that situation and blurt out things and think, oh man, I shouldn't have said that. I think that's part of organization. All right, how do you handle that situation before it comes? Or maybe you're going to have a meeting with your AD, and I think you have to have your thoughts organized. You know, all that deals with organization. And I think if you have that, you're better prepared to deal with those maybe uncomfortable situations that come up because you're organizing your thoughts.
Right. Absolutely. You've got to be prepared for the situations we don't want to face, like the parent or the issue with a kid. A kid says he wants to quit the team, for example, you know, just whatever it may be. Yeah. Just have your thoughts in line about how you handle it. Cause at some point it's going to happen. You may not have an issue with a parent one year, you may have five issues with parents. Exactly. So those are great points. And the last humility, teacher, authenticity, organized. And then lastly, and again, I think today it's maybe the most important, is being adaptable in the world we live in, the kids we're coaching, all these things. So talk about adaptability and how that transfers to coaching.
Well, you know, I'll go back to Coach K on this, and really Jay Wright, Tom Izzo. I mean, all the really, what I call really good coaches, they've had to adapt over their 30 or 40 years of coaching, you know, with everything else going on and social media and stuff. You know, Coach K, I don't know if too many people know this, but originally, this has probably been maybe 30 years ago, he would not put maybe it was after their first conference championship or first NCAA championship. I'm not sure what it was to be exact, but he would not put the banner up in Cameron because one of their players didn't graduate until he graduated. So he's a 4-year starter for him. So he had to come back. And when he graduated, then they put the banner up. Well, now you can't do that because they're one and done.
There'd be no banners up.
No, exactly. So, you know, you talked about adaptable. I think that's a great example of being adaptable to those situations that come up. And, you know, adaptable isn't necessarily changing your focus or changing what you believe to be true. I think you still keep that, but you have to maybe change a little bit on how you think about things.
Yeah.
As more than how you completely change things, you know, as a young coach, sometimes we think that, all right, we're going to, just for instance, one of the things that you may have, which I did as a young coach, by golly, everybody comes out, they're going to have their shirt tails in for practice. And they're never going to, you know, they're not going to come out for practice, a practice session. Well, maybe you down the road, this isn't feasible for some kid. I don't know why, but, you know, so you have to adapt a little bit. And maybe then you decide, well, it really is not as big a deal as culture-wise as I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I remember, like, I've always been a team shoe guy. Like, everyone has the exact shoe, exact brand. But these last couple of years, due to the supply issues, you know, we're in Adidas, Adidas couldn't get us everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I let the guys get whatever shoe they wanted. It had to be within our school colors, you know, navy blue, white, or gray. And I realized, you know, maybe this is just how I should be in general. Is the shoe that big a deal? Give the players a little bit of room to wear something they like. Or if you've got a 6'7" kid, he may need a different shoe than a guy who's 5'6". So something like that, like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be team shoe guy anymore. Yeah. I don't know. You know, just I may say this still has to be around the school colors, but just little things like that. Like, the standard is still high. The standard is the standard. But yet we can realize that maybe sometimes we take something really serious that maybe we should give the players a little bit of say so on.
Yeah. Yep. I think the more things you can give players a voice, I think then the more they feel it's their team.
Absolutely.
You know, so I forget even who said this, but years ago I was at a clinic and the coach says, I will give the players, they can decide on everything. It doesn't make a difference. You know, what are you going to, what, you know, where are we going to stop and eat at after the game, or, you know, so that he made the point of saying that, you know, that then that made the kids feel like, players feel like, hey, you know, coach is letting us make some decisions here. It's not like this, or, you know, it's not going to, or it's going to be a situation where the kids feel like the team.
Absolutely. I think given the team say so on some pregame meals or where we're going to stop and eat or the shoes. Now, I used to be, you know, the tie on game day guy, but then half the kids don't have ties anymore.
Right.
So it used to be wear Sunday dress, and that was simple. It was everyone wore a tie. But now, man, I go to church. I go to church now. I see people in shorts.
Yeah.
So Sunday dress has changed a lot. So I'll let the guys say, hey, guys, it's, you know, on away games, we always wear our travel suit, but for a home game, what do you want to wear? You know, if you want to wear ties, you can all, but you're going to all do it. You want to wear bow ties. You just want to wear your nice team quarter zip or pullover.
Yeah.
Little things like that used to drive me nuts, but now it's like, I can adapt to little things like that and let the players some say so. And, you know, I know some guys are the tie guy, the sport coat guy, but I'm like, you're 15. Am I going to make you wear a sport coat to biology and chemistry? I mean, I don't dress that way to work.
Right.
But yeah, just little things. And then just adaptable to the times in general.
Oh,
like the times are changing. Kids are changing. People say parents haven't changed and all that. Well, parenting has changed.
Yeah.
Parenting has definitely changed. And parents have more battles to deal with their kids and more outside influences. So I think we have to take all that into account as we're dealing with, you know, I deal with, you know, 14 through 18 and college guys, 18 through 22, really young guys and girls that we're dealing with.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that really, you know, I coached high school basketball for 42 years. And then also coaching the really elite high school kids. There's really not a lot of difference. I don't think kids have changed all that much. I still think, you know, I think the environments around them has changed a lot. I think parenting has changed some. I don't think we raise, don't get me off, you know, stop my soapbox here if I get on too much, but you know, it's not the fact that the village is raising the kids anymore. You know, I think, sometimes we forget the fact that we need a lot of people to help raise kids, and I think we kind of forget about that at times. And so our adaptability comes into play when we see the kids' environment. Now, coaching at City High, you know, my first three jobs, that was much different because we had pretty much middle class to upper middle class kids who could afford anything. So when I took my last job at Iowa City High, it was a very extremely diverse school. Kids lived with their grandmother, an uncle, maybe their dad was in jail. I mean, it was just a whole. So you find out, man, a kid, he may have on a Saturday, he's home trying to take care of his two-year-old sister, nobody else is home, and he's late for practice, you know. So you talk about adaptability. I think that those are kind of things that coach has to have an understanding of, especially high school, have an understanding of and be adaptable. You know, how can you come down hard on a kid if he's truly at home babysitting with his two-year-old sister and nobody else is there, you know?
Well, I think a coach, when they take a new job, definitely have to understand the culture of the school system, the community. And some coaches just shouldn't take jobs based on that.
Right.
Like if you take a job, I've had jobs where after practice, I would spend 40, 45 minutes taking kids home.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if that's the job I want to have now.
Yeah.
You know, family time's taken, but it was fine 5-10 years ago. But honestly, if that was what I need to do now for a job, I might have to have a real honest conversation with myself. And so you're right. You know, this is just the truth. I've had basketball banquets at certain schools where every kid there had two parents. I've had basketball banquets in the past. There wasn't one male in the room besides me. And I was coaching girls. So understand the culture of the system, of the school, of each individual player. And you're right. You'll get those kids who can't go to basketball practice on a Saturday morning because mom's working, dad worked the night shift, and they've got to watch their brother or sister.
Yeah. And I think all this kind of goes adaptable. It kind of goes back to humility.
Yep.
Hey, you know, I got to see this. And the other thing with adaptability, I think, you know, obviously the COVID thing has made us all more adaptable.
Yep.
And we've had to be just out of necessity because, you know, we couldn't meet with our kids a lot. We couldn't have our normal practice. We could, you know, so we really had to be adaptable. Coaches had to be adaptable based on environment circumstances, and COVID really made it. One of the best examples, it's not a huge example, but it just shows adaptability. I was at a youth practice one time with a bunch of eighth graders. Coach asked me to come. Hey, stop in. I'd like to have you to watch practice and give me some feedback. So I went to practice, and during the middle of practice was going great. During the middle of practice, the fire alarm went off. And the custodian or somebody says, everybody's got to get out to figure out what happened. So they trail outside and they wait probably 5 or 10 minutes, and the all clearing sound came on. The team comes back in, and that coach started where he left off. It's like they never missed a beat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was amazing. I was really impressed with, you know, hell, 10 minutes gone, came back in. I mean, they were right on task. And boy, he adapted really good.
Yeah.
And he
set
our whole practice.
Right. That's what a lot. And then you'll spend 10 minutes griping and complaining. And, yeah. And you might as well cancel practice because the mood and the competitive spirit's gone.
Yeah.
And you've been a part of USA Basketball for many, many years. Very successful. Won a lot of gold medals. And you've seen a lot of these within USA Basketball and what y'all's mission is and what you guys are doing for the country and for players.
Well, you know, you it's interesting because you take teams to international competition and it's nothing like here. I mean, the gyms are cold, so the players have to wear hooded sweatshirts. They might have a wet spot on a floor. The floor might be rippled or even cut out in one area when you go to like Argentina or somewhere. So, you know, you as a coach, I think you really have to be one of those guys who doesn't show a lot of frustration when things aren't exactly as you think they should be. And I think that goes over to everything we do as a coach. I think the more frustrated we get, the players get frustrated.
Yeah.
There was a video with Draymond Green, and I think I tweeted it out here a number of weeks ago, but he was talking about, you know, when Steve Kerr, when he would get upset when a turnover occurred or a missed shot occurred, Draymond said, I finally had to tell him, you know, when you get upset that these things happen, then it makes us much more upset and puts a lot more pressure on what we do. So he said, your body language comes right over to us.
Yep.
When we talk about body language, you know, it deals with coaches as well as players and how we got to become adaptable and humble and all those things. So
absolutely. Well, Coach, thanks so much for sharing your experience and knowledge and wisdom with us on these five things that, again, I look at these and hear us talk about, I'm like, yeah, I have some growing to do. But that's why we've got to be lifelong learners and realize whether you're 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s, whatever, there's always room to grow and improve and learn from others like I just learned from you.
Yep, exactly. You know, I, I, you, you I'm sure you look back on your career too, and you credit a lot of coaches for helping you along those paths. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you continue to do that. Like I said, we got to be lifelong learners. We want our players to get better every year. We got to get better every year, you know? And so that's part of coaching and part of what we do.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Coach. You've got a busy couple of weeks ahead, traveling to McDonald's game and various things. And but hopefully we connect one day at a clinic or something like that in the future.
Absolutely. Love to.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much for your time.
Take care.
Yes, sir.